Okay, and this is the hour we'll take your phone calls with Micah Hanks as we talk about his work, The Ghost Rockets. Something's up there, and we'll be back with Micah and your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Micah Hanks with us. We'll take your calls too. Micah, when you wrote the book, The Ghost Rockets, what was the story that captured your attention that got you to start this?
There is one, and you might laugh because it later ended up being rather prosaic. The first case involved what was described as resembling a missile shooting across, I guess, horizontally in front of an aircraft that was coming in for a landing at an airport in Glasgow. This occurred last year. It was interesting because, of course, the way that the media reported on this, I mean, it really made it sound like it might be a missile. And that's what got me and another friend of mine, who I'd mentioned earlier with a background in aerospace and engineering, into looking into some of these reports. Now, within just a few weeks, what's funny is, and I talk about this in the book, that case ended up actually resulting from a young boy who had a remote-controlled toy balloon that he lost, and the thing went zipping by when a wind carried it, and the people on board, the crew aboard this aircraft, literally observed this. This is in likelihood what they said that they saw, and that this little toy balloon had been mistaken for a missile passing by. So, you know, from such inconsequential beginnings, dynasties have been built, I guess, and here we are looking into real valid reports of ghost rockets, all based on my interest in a toy balloon.
I remember once I was driving on the freeway in St. Louis, and a little tiny rocket, it must have been about 9 inches long, fell on the freeway as I was driving right past it. And for a moment, I thought, maybe this is one of those little toy model rockets, and it just landed. And then I thought, maybe this was like a little tiny missile that fell off a jet or something, you know, a fighter jet. Who knows?
Oh, wow. Who knows? It could have been a ghost rocket, George.
You never know. You never know. When all this was being put together, of course, and I think this could go down as one of those UFO classics, 50 years from now, somebody will be saying, so Micah Hanks wrote this about that. What will people say about these objects 50 years from now?
You know, I would like to think that people will say, well, you know, Micah Hanks had an interesting interpretation of that back in, you know, 2013, 2014. And now, of course, we know that, you know, these, what he called ghost rockets, were this or they were that. But that may not be the case. That's what I would like to think. And I'd like to think of myself as being a person who's humble enough to either be proven right or to, in truth, be corrected on down the road when we have more information. You know, unfortunately, this is a situation that we're facing. I gave a lecture about this late last year, and there were some skeptics in the audience of primarily believers, and I tried to give a very factual report. And one of my friends of the skeptical ilk, who I went and spoke to, he's written for Skeptical Inquirer magazine in the past, and I asked him, I said, now, I just gave you this report with this information or this presentation on these ghost rockets. Now, what was your feeling about this? And he said, I thought it was very, very unbiased, and you didn't make any bold claims. You just did a very good job, you know, presenting the evidence. Later, he ended up defending me on a popular skeptic video cast when one of his co-hosts had said the problem with Micah Hanks's report is he reported on these things, but he didn't really say these ghost rockets were this or that. He didn't really say that they were anything. He jumps in, and my friend says, you know, well, I didn't remember it like that. I would have, had I been there, George said, well, would you prefer that I make a bold claim in the absence of absolute factual data that tells us one way or another what these things are? All I hope to do is draw attention to the reports and present that factual data. I'm not going to make a bold claim if I cannot support that with evidence. What I know now is that there's something going on. One day, I hope on down the road, people will know what that is.
Maybe so. Let's go to the phone. Zach is truck driving in Texas. Hey, Zach, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, George. Hi there, Micah. I got a quick question for you here. About 11 years ago, my dad and I were driving south on I-5, and right around Lost Hills there, we came across this object. I want to say it was an orb. It didn't really have any shape besides just a ball of light. And at the time, I was in the Civil Air Patrol, so I was very familiar with most of the aircraft that were in service at the time. And this thing was quiet, maneuvered like nothing I had ever seen. And we even rolled down our windows, rolled back our skylight on the Suburban we were in, and we didn't hear a single sound coming off it. Was this an alien craft?
Hmm. Well, that's an interesting story there, Zach. I'll tell you this. I couldn't tell you if that was an alien craft or not, but I will tell you that I have had some experience studying a variety of phenomena that sounds remarkably similar to what you described there, and it's known as the Brown Mountain Lights. For years, I have studied the Brown Mountain Lights, and I was recently invited to attend a group of scientists and researchers who were very serious. I mean, astronomers, geologists who are trying to crack this nut. Some of them prescribe to the Earth light theory. Some of them prescribe to plasmas like ball lightning. Some of them think that there may be something more to it. You know, who knows what that actually is? It sounds consistent with reports of the phenomenon known as ball lightning. But then again, there have been some pretty incredible reports of illuminations like that in association with what appear to be more advanced and maybe technologically controlled objects just as well. I know that one of the famous Iranian UFO cases had resulted in the Iranian government believing that the CIA had access to drones that behaved very much like what you described, but that were capable of moving at speeds, you know, in excess of Mach 10. And this was, you know, a couple of decades ago. That's a very compelling story to me. Who knows what it was? It could go either way. If I had to make a guess, though, my guess would probably be that the best explanation might be ball lightning. That does sound consistent with things like ball lightning and plasma formations that occur naturally in nature.
Well, and you've got to look for the natural causes or the man-made causes first, I think, in any kind of a UFO case.
Of course, yeah. Remember what Arthur Conan Doyle wrote, and it's been used so much to the point of almost being blasé, but I love it so much, and I hope you don't mind me saying it here, that, you know, we have to eliminate the improbable and the impossible and that grain of truth which remains at the end. That is what we have to accept as truth. That's what we're trying to do as UFO researchers. That's what Edward Ruppelt did. You know, that's what Stanton Friedman has done and Richard Dolan does. And, of course, you know what I hope to continue to do myself today. We're just trying to get to the facts. And I don't think that, you know, it's meant to be taken personally when one of us has to come along and say, you know, this or that may not have been as extraordinary as what it may have been perceived as at the time. By the same token, as Zach had just said, you know, I wasn't there in the vehicle with him when they observed that. Had I been there and seen what he saw, I might be sitting here right now telling you that wasn't ball lightning. Who knows?
Who knows what it was? Let's go to Toledo. Jesse's with us east of the Rockies. Jesse, good morning.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I had a question for Micah real quick.
Okay, he's listening and standing by.
Okay. Yeah, it's regarding the, I heard you mentioning NASA, and I couldn't resist but call, right? It's regarding the Dark Knight. Are you familiar with that?
You said dark matter?
No, the Dark Knight satellite.
Oh, the Dark Knight satellite. Yes, I certainly am.
Okay, I was just curious. Could they really possibly be 13,000 years old?
You know, the issue with the Dark Knight satellite.
That's a great story, though, Mac.
Isn't it? Gosh, you know, I mean, and I'm still a little on the fence about that, but I'll just tell you this. You know, I've got a few friends who actually have worked over the years with NASA. Some of them are still with the space program. I've gone to these friends, and this is a point I'll make, by the way, less often these friends will tell me that they are willing to go to a hardline debunker skeptic. They want to talk with someone who's more open-minded, because even people in positions like, you know, aerospace and government, they're just as intrigued by these kinds of things oftentimes as you or I would be. And so, of course, knowing people who work in those areas, and a lot of them are listeners of my podcast, The Graylian Report, that's how I find these people. They hear my podcast, and they contact me and say, listen, I've got some stuff to tell you. So I'll go to them, and I've done that with the Black Knight satellite, and I've asked them, what is really going on here? The official story I've been told is that in likelihood, that there were actually, as I understand, rocket parts. There was actually, I think, a portion of a thruster that, according to documentation online, has an inappropriate date appended to it, which gave the impression that that the object in question may have been something other than what was accounted for. And because of that, there was the apparent presence of an anomaly. And I think that, to an extent, there is sort of a mythology that has been appended to that story for years, that this is a 13,000-year-old satellite. To my way of thinking, it would be difficult to prove that, you know, considering that we didn't have technology to observe the stars to the degree that we do today, 13,000 years ago, or even 1,000 years ago. So, you know, I'm a little on the fence on that, because I still think that there may be some credible data worthy of further consideration. But what my friends in higher places have told me is that that's more than likely something of ours that's been up there, and it's just that certain locations have the date wrong about it.
What some have said, of course, is that it's also called the Black Knight satellite.
Right.
And some have said that it could be 13,000 years old, as he said, of unknown origin, possibly alien, but maybe we launched it many, many years ago. Who knows? You know, Micah, I also think that we have had other past civilizations that had high technology, and it's very possible they might have done stuff like this.
I have, I think a lot of people would consider that a kooky viewpoint, but me personally, I've always been intrigued by that possibility. If you spend enough time hanging around with Dr. Robert Schock, you have to, I think, question what may have gone on in the past. I think he's going to be on your program tomorrow night too, isn't he?
Yes, sure is.
Yeah, Dr. Schock.
He's one of the best.
I've been around Dr. Schock a couple of times, and he's a dear soul. And you know, again, it's great when we see a person who applies, you know, science. He's got a background not just in geology, but geophysics as well and other things. And you know, he applies hard science to try to determine how old certain civilizations may have been. Now, he doesn't necessarily come out there and say that there are people with death rays and Atlantean kind of technologies, but I'll tell you this: I certainly think that the Earth is a lot older than we realize. And I've always been intrigued by those kinds of stories. So, you know, people can think what they want, but I don't think, again, that necessarily we have all the facts about the history of this planet. Now, if we wanted to go in an extraterrestrial direction for a moment, which I do like to do from time to time, we look at something like the Black Knight satellite. How better to observe planet Earth than to put a satellite up there that can monitor what's going on here on the planet? To me, if I were an extraterrestrial civilization, that might make more sense than sending a UFO down here and risking being shot down and things like that.
You know, did you ever hear of the satellite possibly could be coming from the Epsilon Bootes star system?
Yes, I've heard about these sorts of things. And, of course, the idea that radio emissions also may emanate from certain places like this in space and all of this. And, you know, it's a very fascinating situation. But I think that, you know, the problem is that right now, according to what we understand to be our conventional technology, or maybe not even conventional technology, but I guess our consensus view toward what we know we have, we are faced with the tremendous problem of just trying to be able to get out there or to try and communicate with intelligences that might exist out there. You know, when the Arecibo message was first lifted into space, it's often been pointed out that that was more just a display of what we actually could do. At the time, we could send a message with an encoded binary message, you know, that we would hope maybe someone would intercept one day and find and say, hey, there actually are intelligent monkeys down there on that planet. But the thing is that I think that by the time that message, the Arecibo message, eventually reaches where it was directed, you know, that'll be 25,000 years or so from now. And, you know, the nature of the universe as we know it, the literal galaxy and the formation of the stars and planets that we can observe from here on Earth, they will have changed by then. And so right now, you know, it's kind of like banging rocks together or rubbing sticks together to make a fire. We're not quite maybe on par with what we would expect of extraterrestrial intelligences out there. And that presents a few problems for us from time to time.
Take another couple of calls before the break. Brad, anonymous in terms of where he may be. Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, I'm an aviation professional, and I know normally I don't talk about things that you see flying around that don't really make any sense, and that stems from my childhood. When I was a child, I grew up in the hills of West Virginia. I grew up in a flight path for the Air Force, and so we would have the big Air Force planes flying over all the time. We'd see them at least a couple times a week, bare minimum. Well, I remember when I was a child, we saw this thing that I asked my dad what it was, and he wouldn't answer. You didn't see anything. It's nothing you want to tell anybody about. Don't talk about it at school. You didn't see anything. And what we saw was, it's kind of hard to explain. It was, I couldn't see the end of it. It came up on us so fast. I couldn't see the end of it fore and aft or left and right. And I saw openings on the bottom. There were openings on the bottom. It wasn't a flat structure. I mean, it was probably maybe 2,000 feet above the house. But I couldn't see anything in either direction other than this massive object that came over the house. It was incredibly fast. I mean, it was It was fast, but it wasn't. I mean, something that size, you wouldn't expect to go that fast. You could see structures along the whole bottom of the aircraft.
Brett,
I didn't see any thrusters, nothing. And I just don't know what it is. And I figured I would call and see, does that kind of fit your guys' mold? Is that something that you've heard of before? Or?
Well,
that's
Brett,
a pretty good, interesting analogy of what was out there.
Yeah, certainly. Brad, were you able to determine any kind of a shape of the actual craft?
Any kind of what now?
Any kind of shape. I mean, was there a general shape that it seemed to have, or did it move so quickly you just were able to see something large?
All I could tell, I mean, because it was on top of the house, we lived on the top of a mountain. But at the speed that it, you know, it came up on the house before we didn't even know anything was there. It was dark out, but I could see small illuminations on the bottom. And to me, being in aviation, it looks like something that, you know, it looks like something that should be man-made. I couldn't tell shape-wise. I mean, it had protrusions on the bottom, but it almost looked to me like it was shaped like a massive skyscraper flying over my head.
Oh.
It was just in an extreme scale, something I've never thought of. You know, the closest thing that I've ever heard of talk about on the radio was, I guess, the thing that flew over Texas and half of Texas saw.
Yeah.
But the guy described portholes, and I didn't see portholes. I saw vents. I saw protrusions, structures that you wouldn't think to see on something that would be flying in our atmosphere.
Right.
And it didn't fly with the constraint. It wasn't constrained by gravity, I guess it would say. And it was silent. It was stone cold silent. It was over the house for, it was quick, but it wasn't, I don't know. Everybody, when you hear people talk about a spacecraft, they're saying, "Oh, it zipped right by." Well, this was quick to a. You know, I normally work with rotorcraft, so you know, 200 knots, 300 knots to me is fast, and that was about the speed that it looked like. It seemed like it was moving at, and it was over the house for a good minute or two before it had actually. You know,
what kind of feeling, Brett? What kind of feeling did you have when you saw it? I mean, were you scared or were you in awe?
Well, I was a teenager at the time. I think it was 12 or 13. And I didn't know what to think. It was kind of, that looks like something out of a science fiction movie. I mean, I didn't get an ominous feeling. I hear all these people talk about UFOs, and I got this ominous feeling. It just didn't seem extraterrestrial to me. It seemed like something that somebody here that's way more intelligent than me might have dreamed up. But I don't really see how you could hide something like that.
Micah, what about the hollow earth theory? And they're coming from there.
You know, that's a very interesting question, George. I've been interested in that for a long time. And by the way, Brad's encounter was extraordinary.
I love
hearing stories like that.
Let's talk about the hollow earth theory when we come right back. We're going to be back in just a moment. Final segment with Micah Hanks, the author of The Ghost Rockets. We'll take your final calls as well. But what about the hollow earth? Let's get his views on that when we come back. And by the way, those of you in the Boise, Idaho area, I'm going to be live at the Egyptian Theater on March 22nd. Full information on our guests, Jim Mars, Stanton Friedman, Joshua P. Warren will be with me, plus some entertainment. You're going to love it. Just go to our website, click the highlight reel, and you'll get the information, or it's on our calendars section. It's my first time out in Boise. I'm looking forward to this. But come on out here. They tell me it seats 700 people, and they said the tickets are going like crazy, so make sure you jump on board. We're going to come back in a moment with Micah Hanks and take final phone calls here at Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, of course. Micah Hanks with us, the Ghost Rockets. Micah, as we get into the hollow earth theory, I want to get your thoughts on that. But where do we get your latest book, The Ghost Rockets? Off your website or where else?
You'll find it at both of my websites. Of course, a lot of the listeners, and this is the one that's linked to coasttocoastam.com. It is my site, The Graylian Report, that's graylianreport.com. Also, Micah Hanks, that's just my name.com. Both of those sites have a bookstore where they can find this and all my other titles, and you'll find it on amazon.com just as well.
Okay, cool. Let's go to Tim in Phoenix, west of the Rockies. Tim, let's start with you. Go ahead.
Hey, Micah. Hey, George. How you doing?
Great.
Well, a friend of mine, I'm calling about the Phoenix Lights. The night that happened, he was driving down one of our major freeways, I-10, and all of a sudden this big triangular-shaped craft went above the freeway where they were at, and all the cars were pulling over. He pulled over, too. A bunch of people pulled over the freeway to look at this thing, and he looked up. He said he could see those stars, so it was like a solid craft. And after he saw this thing, he kind of became like a UFO guru. So one thing I wanted to bring up to you guys, you're talking about facts. I've been a UFO buff, you know, since I was a kid. So I gave him this book by Jacques Vallée. I don't know if you've heard of that guy.
We sure have.
His name of the book's Revelations, because this guy was thinking he just, you know, it was like he saw Christ or whatever. So I gave him the book because the book was saying that a lot of this is misinformation from the government, because when the triangular craft flew over, then all of a sudden, about 10 miles away, they started dropping flares, which was all over the news. And anyway, the guy read the book, and now he doesn't know what to think. But what I'm thinking, it was probably a craft built by the American military. Mm-hmm. And they were doing an experiment, because why would they put the flares and then government Symington all of a sudden is on the, you know, the television making a big joke out of it. Of course, now he comes out and said he saw the thing himself.
Yeah, now he's serious.
I'm just wondering, what do you think about the misinformation thing about the government? Or there, you know?
Well, I think that's very possible, Micah, isn't it? Misinformation or disinformation?
Yeah, I think we have to take that possibility seriously. And I'll just say this to Jacques Vallée. Any person who considers themselves a serious researcher, or even just a person who has a serious amateur interest in the UFO subject, I would tell you to go read skeptical research and also read, you know, the more belief-oriented, if you want to call it that. You know, pair the two. But Jacques Vallée, he is probably one of the best combinations of those two. The book that the caller just mentioned there, that is maybe one of my favorite books that Jacques Vallée wrote, and it does take a, at times, overtly skeptical approach to studying UFOs. Again, I think because we have to. But then he also blows the lid on some very interesting potential elements that, yes, to use that famously media weaponized term, they do point to a conspiracy and an idea that there are things being kept from the public. I think truly that that is probably a portion of what's going on. And all of these things for Jacques Vallée, may not for all of us, but for Jacques Vallée, they point away from the extraterrestrial hypothesis of UFOs. Fascinating research.
All right, let's go to back. Well, let me ask you about the hollow earth theory first, Michael.
Sure.
Then we'll go back to some final calls here. What do you think of that possibility that these craft are originating from there?
You know, I don't know how literally I would interpret that, although you know, listeners of my podcast know that I frequently refer to being hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth. And of course, that joke that I begin each Grayling Report podcast with is actually a reference to the Shaver mystery and the subculture that surrounds UFO phenomenon in relation to the hollow earth studies. Now, whether or not you take it entirely literally, I think it's important historically to remember that Ray Palmer, who, of course, you know, he left amazing stories and, you know, made famous Richard Sharpshaver and those stories of, you know, there being creatures called Darrows and Taros that lived in an underground cavernous realm beneath our earth. You know, he went on to found Fate magazine, which, of course, I work very closely with these days. And in doing so, he became convinced from talking with Kenneth Arnold and then continuing his relationship with Richard Shaver, he became convinced that the UFO phenomenon was no extraterrestrial phenomenon, but yes, that these things emanated from the hollow earth. Now, a lot of people would say, well, that's just so bizarre, and that's just frankly kind of silly. We can't take someone like that seriously. I'd point out that Palmer would often be very, you know, scrutinizing toward other claims that had been made in the field. One quick case was George Adamski. People at that time, of course, took when he came out and was talking about his encounters in the desert. You know, Palmer had said, you know, he contacted me years ago before Kenneth Arnold's UFO sightings when I was editor at Amazing Stories. His story was a little different back then. Rather than being a man from Venus on a flying saucer, it was Jesus on board a spaceship. And he said, I don't think that Mr. Adamski is telling the truth. So maybe Ray Palmer wasn't that crazy. I don't know if he was right, but he certainly believed in the Shaver thing and the idea that there was a hollow earth component to all this. I don't know that I would put much stock in that, but it is an interesting element to the UFO subculture, certainly.
Well, it's an interesting possibility. It really is, Mike. Are you going to be speaking in any locations coming up?
I will, actually. Yeah, let's see. Coming up a little later this year, I'm going to be going on a really fun thing called the Ancient Alien Cruise. Dr. Robert Schock will be joining me. I think Mike Barra and Jason Martell. We're going to be going and doing some land excursions, you know, in Mexico and other places. And, I mean, it's one thing to go to an event. It's really cool to be able to be at sea, you know, potentially watching for UFOs and things out there and attending lectures and studying this stuff in that kind of environment. So that's kind of cool. And I won't be speaking at the Ozark UFO conference, but I'll be there. And I think you'll probably be in the neighborhood that weekend as well.
I will be there. I'm all over the map this year, Mike.
You are. You're a busy man.
First time caller, Ron in El Centro, California. Go ahead, Ron. Thanks for calling.
I told the screener that it would probably take longer for me to explain where I'm at than to explain my experience. But when you started talking about the Flight 800, I had to get through, whether it was shortwave or CB or whatever. But I live about an hour and a half south of Palm Springs, 10 miles west, north of Mexicali, 100 miles east of San Diego, in the Imperial Valley Low Desert. I grew up there. I spent 16 years out there in a place called Plaster City. About 10 miles north of where the village was, USG had a village for some of the workers. And the Navy, El Centro Naval Air Facility, that's the winter home of the Blue Angels. In 63, 64, they were doing a lot of bombing runs, napalm bombing runs. And then they would ship the guys off to Vietnam. And I was probably 6-7 years old, and everybody was eating dinner, and I was walking through people's yards, and there were trees, cars in the driveways, there were telephone poles next to the street. Something came down. It must have been only about 4 or 5 feet off the ground. Like I say, I was 7, 8, 9 years old, and this thing was moving. It was huge. It was metallic and just absolutely huge. And it passed through the cars, the trees, the telephone poles, and me without disturbing any matter at all. After it happened, I had a metallic taste in my mouth, and, I felt a little uncomfortable, but then I was at ease. When you guys started talking about Flight 800, I was thinking it couldn't be anything like that because, you know, you hear about these people that see these sightings and something's hovering and then it starts to move and then, zoom, it's gone, you know? Is it possible that something could be moving at such a high velocity of speed that it could go through inanimate objects without disturbing any of the matter?
It sounds like it's more dimensional, Micah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that is something that I kind of talked about in my last book, UFO Singularity. And again, you know, I have to frame this in the context of it being a more speculative approach to this. But Jacques Vallée, who we've talked about some this hour, he's done the same sort of thing. The bottom line is this. I don't think that it's fair to rule out what people say that they've seen. I don't think that it's fair to say that, you know, all UFO sightings, and I frankly just don't agree with this idea that all UFO sightings are mass hallucinations and things like that. There has got to be something more to this than all of that. And with the what we might call high strangeness, just as we've heard from the caller there, with the high strangeness that often comes with these reports, it is understandable that men of science like Jacques Vallée and like many others before and since, that they will apply bold speculative theories to these kinds of things. I mean, look at the guest who was on before me, the venerable Michio Kaku. I love his work. He's a person who's he's not afraid to get out there and to speculate. He's also a reasonable, skeptical, scientific thinker. If there hadn't been speculation in the mind of Oppenheimer or Einstein or Dr. Kaku, you know, we might not have a lot of the great concepts that we have today. At some point, we do have to step outside the conventional box and start saying, what if? And I think that we just heard a great what if case. Who knows what's going on? Is there a dimensional component to that? You know, I couldn't tell you, but it is a possibility that we have to consider. We really do.
It is. To me, it's more romantic, Micah, to think of these craft coming from planetary systems in our universe, but they could be dimensional. I mean, there's so much we don't understand.
There is. And to go around claiming that we do understand all this or that we have simple explanations for what obviously are complex phenomena, I think it amounts to intellectual dishonesty, and I won't do that.
Let's go next to Jim, truck driving in Illinois. Hey, Jim, go ahead.
Hi there, Mr. Norrie and Mr. Hanks. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
You've got a great program going here.
Excellent. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I was curious about the possibility of our government having on hand a weapon or a series of weapons that we know nothing about that they're counting on for defense. And that's one reason why they're drawing down our conventional forces, you know, the drawing down with 20-30% to a 450,000 troop military. And the reason I ask this is because I either heard it on this show or I read it, I don't recall, but Winston Churchill saw UFOs in England during the Second World War, and it's reported that Dwight Eisenhower actually stepped inside of one on a military base when he was president back in the 50s. So can you expound on that? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, Churchill indeed had a report of a UFO and did not want it released because he feared that it would shatter religion and government control. Do you remember that story, Micah?
I certainly do. And, I don't know that I can lend all that much veracity to the Dwight Eisenhower case, but it is one case in a long line of, reports that involve U.S. presidents, and really even not just U.S. presidents, world leaders, I should say. Among U.S. presidents, we all know, of course, Jimmy Carter. We know that Ronald Reagan, I think, had an incredible observation of a light from on board his craft while he was governor of California. Bill Clinton had taken a serious interest in UFOs, and George Herbert Walker Bush had also allegedly told Jimmy Carter, he was then head of the CIA when Carter was in office, he had allegedly told him when Carter asked about UFOs, sir, you don't have a need to know for that information. So clearly there's a component to all that. And I'll tell you, when it comes to world leaders and UFOs, I'd recommend to anyone look into the Italian fascist UFO files, going all the way back to the days of Mussolini and Marconi. They were reporting the kind of things that we're talking about right now in relation to UFOs way back, even before the Second World War. Truly, truly fascinating stuff.
Gary, anonymous, somewhere out there. Gary, go ahead.
Micah and George, what an honor. Thank you.
You're welcome, Gary.
I have he's deceased now, a distant cousin that was an MP at Wright-Patterson and was there when they brought the bodies from Roswell. Uh-huh. And then also I have a question. Are you aware of TR-3B? That's the Lockheed Martin craft. And also, do you believe that the Vatican will be the ones to release the information on UFOs? And I'll take my answers off air. Thank you.
Well, the Vatican has been very instrumental in UFOs these days, Micah.
They have been. They've talked about it. Now, I don't know. Do you think that they're going to be the ones that release information, George?
Nope. I still don't think anybody's going to release information.
You and I are really on the same page about that. I agree. Maybe it has more to do with what information there actually is to be released. Maybe it has more to do with whether they would even release it. But yeah, I don't think that the Vatican will do that. With regard to the TR-3 he mentioned, I'm actually looking at a fantastic diagram provided me by my friends at Open Minds. It was actually computer-aided drawings by Michael Schratt, and I'm looking at the TR-3B right now on this diagram that I keep right here next to my desk. I certainly am aware of that craft. Also, fascinating stuff.
Mike is in Desert, Hot Springs, California. We'll get you in here. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Mike. I'm sitting here listening to the show. I'm making my stomach turn. Myself, my wife, and my two children were traveling down the 10 Freeway East coming from Los Angeles. And we hit the 15 freeway, and we were heading east towards Desert Hot Springs, and my kid said, "Dad, there's some lights outside the car." And I just kind of dismissed it for a little bit, and then a little way later, "Dad, there's lights outside the car." So my wife and I, we slowed down a little bit, and we looked out, and there was a triangular craft up to the left of us, pretty high up in the air, and it was following along at our speed. So naturally, I sped up to get away from it to see if it would dissipate, and it followed us, and it stayed with us for about 70 miles all the way to the Highway 62, which is near our town. And I, at that time, decided, well, I'm not going to let this thing follow me home, so I'm going to get off the freeway and see what happens. So I got off, and it stopped, and it stayed over us for probably 15 or 20 minutes, and I called the Highway Patrol. Something was going on, and, you know, they pretty much told me I was crazy and dismissed it with all these possibilities and that and there, and it finally left, and we went home, and it's just affected us ever since.
Yeah, you're not crazy, Mike, that's for sure. What it could be, Micah, anybody's guess, huh?
Anybody's guess, but I'll just tell you this. I agree. I don't think Mike's crazy because I've had so many people report these kind of craft and these sorts of experiences. Good on him, by the way, for contacting Highway Patrol. It's a little sad that that's the kind of response he got, because I don't think that these people are crazy. I mean, I hear that same story all the time, and I'm convinced that there are experiences that are going on all the time that probably go unreported just because of that same fear of ridicule. I wish people would at least consider to take it a little more seriously.
I think so. Michael, we're out of time. Good luck, my friend.
As always, see you soon, George.
All right. Michael Hance, The Ghost Rockets. That's the name of Micah's book. And fascinating material. Absolutely fascinating material indeed. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.